This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Welcome back to Enterprise Biz Bytes. My name is Jeff Sandhu, together with
Audrey Raj
and Frida Liu.
Yay!
What makes you trust a leader, especially if they swap names around? How do you do this? Let us know on BFM Radio, at BFM Radio on Twitter and Instagram, or you could WhatsApp 018-789-8899. We've got a couple of WhatsApp messages. Richard Bradbury.
Oh, that's a familiar name.
A very familiar name. He said, honesty, integrity, vision, and trust in the team. Christine Wong. Another very familiar name has replied our Twitter and said, transparency and communication are key. Talk to your team, be honest, but be kind with them. Small gestures go a long way to build a great relationship with your team. Ed Rui says, when he or she are on the ground, grown with the front line of operations, regardless of the structural hierarchy.
Looking at Insta story, we have Hema who says transparency. Another one who says walk the talk is Dreamy Mun. Gwen says their actions. Yeah, their actions. And Jen says when he or she trusts me as well. Yeah, like that echoes one of our first messages that said, you know, the leader needs to trust the team as well.
Right. Yeah. You know, something Christine mentioned, right? Kindness and empathy. Right. Mm-hmm. These are the things that also matter, you know, and, you know, of course, the article later on, you hear a bit about empathy. Just with Maggie here again, bravo to Miss Leela for putting all the essential qualities that build and garner trust. Also like to add that we should trust even opposition MPs who support good policies and plans, even though tabled by the ruling party. This quality shows that they do have the rakyat's interest at heart. Such MPs are definitely professional and not just opposing for the sake of opposing. We need watchdogs, not rabid dogs.
Ooh.
True.
Clever.
Right?
Anyways, continue on, you know, sending in your feedback and your thoughts on what makes you trust a leader. It's at BFM Radio on Twitter or Instagram, 018-789-8899 on WhatsApp. Moving along, though, you know, COVID-19 has really, I guess, disrupted many different sectors. And of course, you know, the outbreak doesn't seem to be slowing down at the moment. And the number of cases that have been tested positive is increasing daily, whilst many employees are now being forced to work remotely. A pandemic outbreak of this magnitude has really caught companies and many industries off guard, with a shockwave tearing through their supply chain and businesses. So how do you exactly plan for a disruption? So this is an article from and insights from EY, and it's about how do you build supply chain resilience in order to cope with disruption. And, you know, it struck various different industries, but not at all at the same level of damage. Industries such as auto, travel, consumer goods, electronics, retail, they've all been profoundly impacted. So they gave some examples, though, which was actually, you know, pretty interesting, because it's something that I actually never thought would actually have an impact. So a market-leading car manufacturer needed to shut down 7 of its factories in Korea due to qualified vendors' inability to deliver components to produce wire harnesses for their vehicles. And these suppliers happen to be located in the Hubei province, where the government has implemented a complete and total lockdown during this outbreak. An immediate impact of this issue has affected nearly 40% of this global car manufacturer's total network output, and also dictating the pause of a new model launch. And now the car makers is currently scrambling for an alternative vendor for these critical components. But it's not going to be so easy, because vendor qualification to comply with the ISO standards and the TS standards, quality management requirements, may prevent the reopening of these factories in Korea in the near future. Possessing multiple qualified sub-tier vendors and alternative sources in diverse location would not have eliminated all risk, but maybe would have allowed some capacity to be utilized. So it's also looking across and not just having one supplier to do all this, right? And procurement professionals should also look to assess category strategies that balance cost and risk, starting from new product model and platform planning to day-to-day procurement operations, leveraging on technology to support got the response. Another one example they gave is a leading global active apparels company that have been embracing online omnichannel developments over the past 5 years. It has successfully cultivated a new online sales channel, over 25% from direct sales from its traditional offline business model. But the current events and changes in consumer behavior have impacted its offline business significantly, with over 50% of direct stores closing down. Now, the apparels company plans to boost their online business support by agile internal collaboration for these ad hoc marketing events and enable a seamless connection between online and offline inventory to mitigate the loss of its offline business. Mm. So, you know, despite you having an online presence and you've been doing this for right. 5 years and stuff, what happens? Can it support if your offline business crashes down and, you know, goes through some things like this? What happens then, right? So there are some areas where they've listed down in how you can sort of build a resilient supply chain, and you need to find a balance between the current state of efforts and a long-term foundation of resilience, because currently companies, they do have, you know, a huge task ahead of them to recover from this viral outbreak. But EY in this article is saying that there also needs to be a substantial discussion on how to prevent the next unpredictable tidal wave from having the same impact. So based on the developments from this pandemic, coupled with the learnings from past disruptive instances, they've suggested some key pillars that you can probably have a look. And the first one is, of course, you've got to conduct an end-to-end supply chain risk assessment and prioritize critical focus areas. So there are a few steps you could do here. One is you've got to identify the changing demand and inventory levels, and then you can locate these critical gaps. And then you got to define a common goal and what is your short-term actionable plan, and also the outcome that you want from this. And then the last one is deploy, which in leading companies build action plans based on scenario analysis to limit the impact on disaster. So you got to deploy different kind of strategies. The third one is, of course, to develop a robust risk management process and diversify supplier network.
Right.
You also have to implement a digital and automated manufacturing capabilities paired with a very strong manufacturing excellence, evaluate and adjust procurement category that is strategic priorities, and of course invest in more collaborative and agile planning and fulfillment capabilities. You know, we'll share the link, and it goes into in-depth analysis on like how these strategies can work for your supply chain. The one major, I guess, you know, takeaway is really on like, it's not just recovering from this current, you know, situations that a lot of companies are facing, but it's also what kind of learnings are you taking from this while you recover from this, and then what are you going to implement when the next kind of, you know, outbreak or, you know, kind of disruption happens that you can't predict, you know, despite all the data analytics that you have. It is very difficult to predict something as critical like this.
Right. Interesting is risk management, right? It's, you know, we talk about crisis management and we talk about contingencies, right? Of course, this is unprecedented, but it is, I guess, an opportunity now to sort of prepare. I remember years ago, whenever we talk about crisis management, and very typical working with a petrol company, an oil company, and this would be the same situation. If a truck overturns and explodes, this is what you do. So there are already steps in place in case something like this happens. So, and it's like fill in the blanks. So there is a process. You know, so we really have to look at preparing. I would love, I suppose we could do a show one day on how companies have been innovative because of this. Actually, the whole idea behind innovation is because you have constraints that you become innovative.
Yep.
It's the pressure cooker syndrome.
Yeah. Then you, you know, because if you don't have constraints, I've got no budget constraints. I can hire anybody I want. You don't feel the need to be creative, but because you have constraints, now you have to be like, how are?
You know, speaking about dealing with disruptions like this, earlier on when we first heard of the coronavirus, back when we didn't even have a name for COVID-19, we were already trying to seek out organizations that had put in place best practices to deal with a pandemic like this, right? And it was a struggle. Mm. You know, even considering how we had SARS a couple of years back and how that impacted economies around the world, it was still difficult to find companies here that actually put in place these plans for disruptions. You know, considering what happened with SARS, shouldn't we already have best practices on hand for COVID-19? But it was a struggle. But we did manage to get in touch with Siuling from MyWave, you know, and they were a company that works very closely with the manufacturing giants in Penang. And they had, you know, certain like best practices or advice to give these manufacturers, and they put that in place very quickly. And so I guess they were kind of resilient to what happened with COVID-19. And so I guess what we're trying to say here is, like, you know, it doesn't, you don't have to come to a point where you're in a crisis to actually try and put these things in place. You could look at what happened overseas and then just have that set plan that you could then tweak for when you are in times of need.
I mean, a good example is actually our Ministry of Health. You know what I mean? They've handled this well because of past experience. And I believe they're really doing a great job, you know.
With their contact tracers and stuff.
So this is where you've had past experience and you're still using it.
Yeah, so it is very important, you know, through the chaos of recovery, that it's quite easy to overlook some of the root causes and gaps within the supply chain itself that may have paralyzed your business during this unpredictable major event. So that is very important that you learn from it. The article will be posted along with our podcast. We'll be right back with some of your messages when we're asking you, well, we're asking you what makes you trust a leader at BFM Radio on Instagram and Twitter, 01878988899 on WhatsApp. You can get in touch with us now and we'll get your comments in just a bit. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.